the heart of what you're describing right now is essentially creating a more human workplace. Humans by our nature, I mean, when we are in our own elements, if you will, for the most part, we gravitate towards that. If we are in a good place ourselves, we are able to express gratitude. We are able to express appreciation.
Welcome to Helping Organizations Thrive. Today, I have the pleasure of Coach Khan. Good morning, good afternoon to you, Khan.
Good morning and good afternoon to you there, Julian, on the UK.
Yes, well, this is your third time on the podcast. I think you were back in the early days, which was just over 3.5 years ago. And then you came on my 100th episode, and now here you are today into my fourth year of podcasting.
Third time a charm.
Exactly. You are the founder and CEO of Fresh Biz Solutions, and you've been helping businesses achieve strategic goals for more than 20 years by preparing people for the right leadership roles. In addition to that, you are a co-author of The 7 Keys of Navigating a Crisis, which came out in the pandemic year. And you also got another book coming out all about Engagement Blueprint, which we're going to get into. In fact, we're going to be talking about and exploring about how to create employee engagement. Before we get into that, Con, I'd like to just ask, what do you love about what you do?
What do I love about what I do? That's a great question, Julian. I feel very, very blessed from that perspective. I feel very blessed because I do what I love. And a big part of that is having the opportunity to impact people's thinking, their behavior, the results that they're getting. As a lifelong learner, I love teaching. I love coaching. Hence why the name Coach Khan came about. And it's mostly because I do this not just with my executives, but I actually do it with young student athletes, working with them and teaching them life skills through sports.
Fantastic. That's great. And I know your passion, you've got a real passion for that, and you're very excited about what you do. And we're going to be talking about employee engagement, which, you know, I think is really crucial and quite key within organizations. And certainly this time right now is trying to create that engagement, because we know that leads to all sorts of positive productivity, creativity, loyalty, a whole host of stuff comes out of it. And I know you started to write this, but what sparked your interest in the subject? What sparked your interest to write a book about it? I just want to get almost the backstory to your real deep dive into this topic.
Well, then let's take a step back. When you and I first came together, when you and I first met, we were still dealing with the shock of the pandemic, with the mounting crises that we had at the time, with the financial crisis, with the great pause and everything, the impact that it had on our financial organizations and our incomes, the socioeconomic upheavals, all of the changes that were going on and the mental health issues that we were all struggling with. That's when we wrote the first book, The 7 Keys to Navigating a Crisis. And it was timely because it helped people in the moment deal emotionally with the pandemic and the sudden crises and changes. But since then, as things evolved and as we got into the second year, organizations and leaders that I worked with started asking me the simple questions. Said, okay, you've helped me individually. How can I help my team? How can I help my organization now? And where you and I have walked a similar path, a very complementary path, is that the 7 keys became a roadmap to helping people build resilience individually and then organizationally, and being able to follow that roadmap. And then we entered that third year, and people started saying, okay, now that I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, how do I move forward into this next normal? How do I start going beyond that? And what organizations and leaders realized is that that growing gap, that disconnect and that distrust that was created between employers and employees, that got really, really accentuated and impacted even more so during the pandemic years. Organizations realized that now that they were able to start opening up their business again, people were not coming back to work, or they weren't coming back in the old ways. And so there was a growing amount of disengagement and distrust that was happening between employers and employees. And that got me thinking, with the great resignation, with so many millions and millions of people leaving their jobs, many times without really knowing where they're going to go, they just wanted to get out of there. And a big part of that is because their needs were not being met in their current workplace. When Gallup did the study and some of the early numbers that I researched and saw, it was shocking. It was shocking to see that just in the United States alone, $350 billion were lost productivity due to disengagement. And that was a big part of the fact that, you know, for the first time in a decade, engagement actually went down. But not just that, disengagement went up. And that was a very alarming point. And the numbers support the concerns that a lot of employers had. When you're losing that much in productivity, that's a big red flag. In addition to that, when you extrapolate that, when you push that out worldwide, the same study, Julian, found that across the globe, organizations were losing $7.8 trillion. That's with a T, $1 trillion US a year from lost productivity. And a big part of that was the disengagement that they were seeing in their workforce. So between those alarming statistics, between the fact that my immediate customers were having concerns, but at the same time, they weren't experiencing the effects of this great resignation. That brought my attention to the fact that, you know what, hey, maybe what we're doing here is paying dividends. Maybe the way that we've been approaching this and taking the toxicity out of workplaces, creating an environment where people can be at their best, is truly the antidote to this disengagement. And the results, more and more I studied them, and I'd love to share some more of that with you, is simply that over the last 30 years, this is what I've been doing. I've been preparing myself for this piece. And the way that I approach the work that I do is really impacting workplaces for my clients. And it's really changing the game. They are becoming a lot more future-proof, if you will, against these kind of changes in the workplace. Their workplaces are not the toxic ones that people are running away from. Instead, they are the kind of places that people gravitate towards. So during the Great Resignation, we were not only not losing people, we're actually attracting some top talent that was interested in coming to work there.
Mm.
So that got me thinking, and that got me researching further. And now this is the topic that I think is been on my mind for the last 18 months or more, very actively. The last year I've been writing the book, The Engagement Blueprint. I've already been speaking on this topic. Companies are paying attention, and they're already seeing the results. My clients are enjoying the results of that, and new clients are coming in every day asking me the same sort of question. How can we make our workplaces the kind of place that people want to be there? They want to give us our best. And the answer to that is very simple. As you know, leaders have a huge hand in that. They can really help shape those workplaces. They can shape that environment and create cultures where commitment and performance are at a very high level.
And we know, obviously, engagement is important, and what you've just shared there about Gallup. But let us just, for people listening now, what is the issue with disengagement? How does it manifest within an organization? Because it might not always be so obvious to people. It becomes obvious to your bottom line. It becomes obvious to certain factors, but what way does it manifest within an office, in a manufacturing facility, wherever it is, when there is disengagement? What happens? What are people observing?
That's a great question, because there are certain symptoms that you will see. There are certain indicators that will really show up in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see it in the way people behave. I mean, in my interviews with the leaders across the globe to kind of validate some of my theories, that we all agreed that you can spot a disengaged employee. It's the person that really doesn't do anything more than what's ultimately demanded of them. They really avoid doing anything above and beyond. That discretionary effort is not there. You can see it in the passion and the way that they attack their work. You can see it in the way that they engage with others, their interaction with other people there. They're operating sometimes passively disconnected from their team and others, and sometimes even more devastatingly active, approaching it from the perspective of really sabotaging things and spreading a lot of negativity into the workplace. I mean, in the studies, the same studies that we're talking about, you're talking about 1 in 5 people across the globe. I mean, in your UK market and the rest of the world that we're talking about, it's not just the US. So across the world, it's 1 in 5 people are only engaged. And when you think about that, if you look to your left and look to your right, to the two people of either side of you, only one of you is actively engaged and giving their best. If you put those 5 people in a canoe and you're going down the river. One of you is paddling. Three of you are just along for the ride, maybe every now and again dipping your paddle in there, but mostly enjoying the ride. And there's this one person in the canoe that's actually poking holes, trying to sink the boat. That's what we're talking about here. When you see that kind of approach to things, people, the negativity is there. The disengagement is evident in the way that they approach things. They don't want to contribute. They're constantly griping and complaining about things. The criticism is high. And they're feeling like a victim, that they never get what they need. These are all behaviors that we notice from people that are unhappy. Their needs are not being met, Julian. So when we're talking about how this manifests, why it happens, there are fundamental needs that we have as human beings, but especially in our workplace, when those needs are not being met, people start disengaging. They start checking out.
And do you think, you know, I know you got that 1 in 5 engage, which is quite horrific, really, in an organization. 20% of your workforce are engaged. Has this always been the case in terms of, I don't know how far these sort of surveys go back to, but has this been a thing systemically happening throughout our sort of our lifetime, our generation, or is it something new? And what's caused the difference, and why has it not been fixed before, you know what I mean, or been raised as an issue?
That's that very astute point, very astute question. Since the turn of the millennium, so probably more than 20 years now, that we've been tracking these numbers, and Gallup is the primary entity and institution that's been doing that for us, we noticed that the trend of engagement has been steadily going up. It's been creeping up, and it's been going into that basically a little over a third of the population was reporting themselves as being engaged, at least in the U.S. Across the globe, the numbers haven't been as positive. But again, culturally, when you look at it and you spread it across the world, there are differences across boundaries, across cultures and everything else, how people look at work and how they approach it and how they're treated at work. So those factors play into it. But let's just say, assume the trend itself has been going upwards. But the last decade, we've noticed that for the first time, at the end of the first year of the pandemic, we saw this dip. The trend was starting to go in the opposite direction. The dissatisfaction was starting to go up, and the engagement was starting to go down. Now, it didn't start with the pandemic. The pandemic, all it did was accelerate things. All it did was pull back the layers and really focus on those points, bring it to our attention. But overall, employers have been settling. The majority of employers have been settling for the effort that they're getting, for the money that they're willing to pay employees. And employees are looking at it and saying, you know what, hey, if I'm not going to be in a situation where I can really give the best of myself, then it's just a job. And I'm going to treat it as just a job.
Mm-hmm.
Where it becomes powerful and impactful, Julian, is when you see the difference between the average organization out there that's not doing things great, but not doing things horribly, and the top performers in this category. When those are in the top quartile of engagement, when people are seeing 70% plus engagement levels within their organization, this difference is so impactful to the business. Those organizations are outperforming their competitors. Let's say, for example, just, you know, revenues, 3 times as much typically from studies from within the UK that are showing that they're generating 3 times greater revenue than their competitors. Their profitability is about 20% more. You look at it and you say retention numbers. Engaged staff are able to retain almost 90% of their people are saying that, you know what, hey, I'm going to stay here. I enjoy it here. I'm looking forward to this. And that has more to do with the culture that you create with your people than, for example, where the work is happening, like now where we're having a lot of remote and a lot of hybrid people. Yes, does it impact it a little bit? Yes. It just means that as leaders, we have to operate and do things a little bit differently. But if you can create that culture, it doesn't matter where people are. If you can create that culture, that environment where people can give their best, they want to stay there. And not just want to stay there, they want to perform well, and they attract other like-minded people that want to be part of that.
Mm. Now, this is really, it's a wake-up call, isn't it? And it's because I think engagement... You know, I've been part of companies where we've done engagement surveys, which is almost feels like it's felt like a tick box. It's felt like not really a way of assessing really at one point in time of how people are engaged, and not always the actions are followed up, all that type of stuff. And this is not just a HR thing. This is not just a nice to have in an organization, because there's, as I said, there's robust data out there that if you get engagement up, you get productivity up, you get revenue up, you get profit up. It all starts going up. Mm-hmm. And I read a study that was done. It's more to do with purpose than engagement, but in some ways there's a link to that as well. Mm-hmm. And they tracked a number of purpose-driven organizations versus standard sales and profit organizations. And the ones, that's over a 10-year period. So it took the highs and lows along the way of each of the companies. But on average, the purpose-led organizations outperformed the standard sales and profit ones by anywhere between 5 and 12%.
Yeah.
In terms of turnover and everything else. So there was a real significant difference. And I know purpose has a part to play in creating engagement with people, getting people to resonate with their purpose and the organizations. So we know this is important.
Mm.
And if you're a leader right now listening, thinking, I'm feeling, oh, my team's not engaged, or it could be more engagement or within the organization,
right.
Where should they start? What's a good place to start for them?
Well, one of the things that I've done is I've developed a simple questionnaire that looks at those four key areas that I've identified that are the main drivers for engagement, the four main needs that need to be met. And through simple questioning, you can get an initial sense of where you might have strengths and where you might have opportunities. And it's something that you can do individually. I'm including it in the book. I also have an online tool that I'd love to share with our audience, Julian, after this session, where people can simply go on and answer a series of questions and get a sense of where they might be strong and where they might need to pay attention. But let's track it back to those four key areas, one of which you just identified through your example with the purpose-led company. So as people, as workers, we have four fundamental needs that I've identified that really shape things. It's if we get those four things right, chances are our team is going to be very, very engaged. Our people individually and collectively will be engaged. The first fundamental need that we have is the need to feel valued. Everybody wants to know that they are appreciated for the effort that they're putting out there, whether it's in their work or in their personal life. So as leaders, we have the ability to impact that. We have the ability to express everything from a simple thank you that costs nothing to reinforcing the right behaviors that we want to see from our workers and really recognizing them for those things, creating an environment where people feel safe physically, emotionally, psychologically, and they know that they're feeling valued. Equitable pay, that's an entry in, that's an ante into the game. If people feel they're being paid equitably, then the rest of this stuff starts coming into play. Respect, when we talk about respect, there are two types that I've researched through the book that I've found are very important. It's the respect that we need to give each other simply because we are working together. We are both people. That's the standard respect that we should be paying each other, just as peers, as friends, as collaborators from this piece. Then there is the earned respect. So there's the owed respect and the earned respect. The earned respect is, I'm going to give you that different kind of respect when I see you performing well for yourself, for the team. When you're contributing to us, that's another level of respect that I can give you. So all of those things, safety, gratitude, our attention. As leaders, how many times do we not give people really our full attention? When we're sitting there trying to have a conversation and we're looking at our screens, we're talking about something else, we're on our mind, we're not present in that moment. Whether it's having a one-on-one with somebody, having a conversation, meeting in the break room half the time, and we don't give people our time. Those are some of the simple things that convey, I value you. And these are all things that we can do as leaders to really check in with people and make sure that they're doing. Even if they're remote, Julian, I still need to reach out to that person and say, hey, how are you really doing? How's it going out there? How can we support you? How can you feel part of this team? And that brings me to the next need, to the second need that I've identified. And that is the need that we all have to feel connected. The purpose-driven organization that you're identifying is nothing more than aligning people's goals, their vision, their values with the values of the organization and the goals. When we feel connected to what we are trying to accomplish as a collective, when we are feeling connected to each other and to our goals, that's a very, very powerful thing. You see that something as simple as in the weekend when you go to the pitch and watch a game, a local football or soccer game. What do we see? We see people impassioned joining arms with people around them that they may not even know because they are connected to a similar purpose, to the same purpose, to support the same cause. You see that in volunteers that are not even getting paid, Julian, that feel connection to what they're trying to do, and they will give their best. So feeling connected, again, in person, hybrid, that's a very powerful need that we have. So we want to feel connected to our, to each other, to our teammates, to the goals that we have, to the purpose of our organization. So that's number two. The third need that we all have is the need to contribute, to feel productive. We all want to know that once we're accepted as members of the team, that we can make a difference, that we can contribute in meaningful ways, that we can be productive. And this is where we come together and we realize that, you know, the systems that we have as leaders, the way that we provide the resources for our people, the way that we define their work, the way that we support them plays a big part in how productive they can be and what they're doing and how well they understand their productivity. I mean, I bring this example to the people that I coach. I asked them, I said, you know, if I was to give you a group photo, a photograph where you have spent I'm with these people. It's a group photo. What's the first thing that we would typically do? Well, for most of us, me included, I'm sure you're probably the same way, is we would try to figure out where are we in this picture? Where am I in this group picture? It's a human instinct. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you see where you are, who was standing around you, what were you wearing that day? The memories start coming back about that day. And you realize what your place in the bigger picture is. We need to communicate, create that line of sight, and then give people the resources and the tools and the support so they can produce and get to that point where they can contribute to that bigger picture. And then finally, speaking of support, the need to feel supported so we can learn and grow. No one wants to feel stagnant. No matter how comfortable we are with our routine and everything else, stagnation is not a good thing. The difference between a river and a swamp is the flow. Is the ability to continue to move, to have some movement. When we are able to continue to learn and grow and challenge ourselves, we don't get old. We don't get tired. We engage the need that we have inside ourselves for a different challenge every day. Even if it's mastering what I already do, it's not always about the promotion. It's about how can I continue to expand my impact, my knowledge, my skills. And for some people, that's a very, very strong driver. For you and I that are constant learners that are itching to find out more, to do more, that's a need that we have, Julian. And that's a need that many people around us on our teams have. And they all want to be able to learn and grow. So those are the four fundamental needs: the need to feel valued, the need to feel connected, the need to feel productive, and the need to feel supported to learn and grow.
Just going back to the valued one, because I think that that's a good place to start. That's the first one you said, and obviously, equitable pay is almost a very functional thing that can be done very sorted. Mm-hmm. The other things you talked about, respect, attention, and just that general making people feel valued for being mm-hmm. a workplace, for who they are, what they bring, what they contribute.
Right.
That's easy to say, that isn't it? That's almost mm-hmm. the what piece, isn't it?
And right.
And it requires, you know, a leader, as you say, just saying small thank yous. But how do we create those behavioral changes? This is behavioral change, isn't it, going on? Where you have a leader who's been told to make somebody feel valued. An example could be just saying thank you every now and again. And rather than it being a tick box, or I've said thank you five times to this person today, mm-hmm. how do we create not only a behavioral change for that, but also the genuineness with it, rather than just, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do to make you feel valued. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So what can we do for that? Because I think that's quite probably a very hard one to shift.
It is. I mean, the heart of what you're describing right now is essentially creating a more human workplace. Humans by our nature, I mean, when we are in our own elements, if you will, for the most part, we gravitate towards that. If we are in a good place ourselves, we are able to express gratitude. We are able to express appreciation. And when we have received it ourselves. And so it's a cascading effect. If you want the line managers to be able to do that, well, are their managers doing that to them? Are they leading by that example? There's an appreciation that needs to be done. You can't dictate from the ivory tower, from the C-suite, and say, you know what, hey, you will go out there and you will express appreciation because our surveys tell us that this will keep people happier and they'll be working more. It doesn't work that way, because when they're focused on the P&L sheet and they just dictate, you know, the numbers indicate that we need to do this, go and do it. That's not part of the culture. Culture is the way we do things, and it needs to start at the top, and it needs to be modeled by everybody, all the leaders within the organization. And that's something that then has that change. When people feel appreciated, they're more willing to express appreciation for that. When they feel valued, they're willing to look beyond that because their cup is full. They're not desperate, Julian, to get to that point. When they're able to feel that and experience that, then that starts overflowing into others that we have. From more practical perspectives, I mean, there's a lot of people that will be listening to us and said, okay, that's all nice and it sounds good, but how the hell do we get there? And a big part of that is I've realized that through the foundational framework, the way that I operate and the way that I've impacted the environments that I've supported, the clients that I've supported, there is a connection between those. So this framework, the way that I help organizations traditionally, Julian, is I make sure that they have enough willing and able people to really help them achieve their goals. I mean, everybody has business plans. Everybody's got these wonderful strategic plans that they've spent a lot of money putting together. But if they don't have the people in place to execute them, they're not even worth the paper they're written on. So resilience, engagement, these are not just terms that we should take lightly. These are not terms that we throw around. These are the things that create the reality that we want to see, that bring those business plans to life. So the way that I do that is, first and foremost, doing a lot of the workshops that we do, helping people get the skills that they need in order to be able to execute their job well. And then working with them on their commitment through coaching, individual and group coaching sessions, through other mediums, to be able to connect that. You create the people that are able and willing to do the job. That's how people feel valued. When you invest in them, and you work on their skills, you guide them, you help them be successful, they see the value in what they're doing and they feel valued from the investment that you're making as a company in them. You're bringing them along. You're allowing them to be part of the journey. And then conversely, when we move beyond the competence and commitment, when connection comes from the commitment individually and in group sessions, and then the teamwork element that I work on, which is the third part of that piece. So commitment, teamwork bring us together. That creates connection. When I work on competence and the systems, the people systems that need to be in place, that in itself creates the productivity. It allows the productivity to happen a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, the combination of the systems and the teamwork together, when you're talking about organizational level, allows you now to really create those people systems that they're going to give people career paths. They're going to give them development paths where they're going to see themselves maturing and achieving their personal and professional goals inside the organization without a need to leave. So it's kind of like, think of it as a Venn diagram with four parts. So competence, commitment, teamwork, and systems are all circles within that Venn diagram. And the overlapping areas are where we see the manifestation of how we can address those needs. It's the combination of two or more of those areas that really hit that sweet spot and address that need that people have. So the framework itself is the work that we do. The engagement part happens because we're addressing those needs through the work that we're doing.
And it's a difficult one because understanding how people feel valued, you know, so you can't measure it, but there is like pulse surveys where you can measure it a lot more now. It's a difficult one because it's, you know, it's not like a typical goal or, you know, profit target. And I think that's where a lot of organizations struggle with, you know, if I create if I make people feel valued, I understand that has an impact. But how do I measure it? How do I measure the impact my people are having by the people feeling valued? And I think, I guess it goes to things like pulse surveys, engagement surveys, isn't it? That's what we're talking about, where you start to measure those more softer things, I guess, that's happening in the workplace.
Well, they're more qualitative rather than quantitative directly from that piece. So the survey needs to reflect that. And it's much more, rather than hard numbers a lot of times, it's perspectives, it's opinions. And those opinions can shift and shade. They're shaded by different events that happen in that time. When you take a survey, you know as well as I do that what's happened preceding it can have a huge impact on people's responses to it. If you just got your bonus a week ago and you're asked, are you happy? Most people will say, yes, I'm very happy, because we've impacted the perception of things through those events. But overall, yes, having a conversation with people through a survey and group pieces, or even one-on-one, understanding, because people's needs to feel valued are very different, Julian. How we perceive value is very different. It's a very personal thing. But that's where a leader needs to build those relationships with his or her team members and really be able to understand, what does this person need to feel valued? What is it that they're looking for? How should I express that? And it's something that needs to be ongoing. Like Zig Ziglar said when he was talking about motivation, you know, engagement, motivation, these things are like bathing. One time is not enough. You have to do them on a regular basis. You have to engage with your team members to drive a lot of those things, to meet their needs on a regular basis. But I'm sorry for leaders out there that are listening to us and saying, oh my God, you want me to do this all the time? That's the job. The job, because we are evaluated not just on what we do individually, what we can produce individually, but what we can produce through our team. So we are always beholden to the discretionary effort, to the voluntary contribution of other people. And leaders, effective leaders, earn that. They earn that contribution from others. They earn that voluntary commitment from others in order to get to the performance.
And finally, with the rise of remote working, how has employee engagement sort of evolved, and what, I guess, strategically best works in a remote or hybrid work environment? Just finally, in terms of what your thoughts on that, and I'm sure you've addressed it within your sort of thinking and studies.
Yes, and surprisingly enough, I mean, when numbers started shifting again and engagement dropped, when we're talking about that shift, it impacted all areas, not just in person, not just remote, but also hybrid. Everybody was impacted by that because it was a broader phenomenon that happened. And it was a broader issue that we needed to address as leaders in our own behavior. But when it comes to engagement, some of the things that we used to take for granted, for example, our ability to take a walk with somebody after the meeting down to the break room to grab a cup of coffee and make that human connection with them, to be able to show them, you know, how much we value them, to whisper those things that we didn't say in the meeting per se, but we wanted to say, hey, look, Julian, I really appreciate all of the work that you've been putting in. I've been noticing the extra effort that you're putting in. Thank you. It's made a difference to me. It's made a difference to the team. I really appreciate that. Or how are you doing? How are you really doing? How's the family? What's going on? You know, having that human connection, we need to make those moments more purposeful now. We need to use our technology to reach the people that are either in hybrid or remote situations to recreate those moments where we still keep them connected. So what I call in the book, and I've been working with this, I call that the leadership paradox. And it's nothing more than, as leaders, we need to advance and become more sophisticated. We need to be able to hold two things together, synthesize them, and bring them together into an effort that's going to make a difference. For example, when you have people that are working remotely or hybrid, you need to be able to combine both empathy and understanding that they're not in the current place where you are, that there is a difference, and they may or may not have, you know, a robust setup at their home. They may not have a dedicated space or a home office to be able to do that, but they're still doing the work. You need to understand their circumstances. And on the other hand, you need to be able to express the tough love that you need as a leader to set the boundaries, to be effective in what you're doing. So essentially, you need to stop managing outputs and start managing outcomes. So it's not a matter of how many hours did you spend in front of the computer. It's a matter of, did we get the job done? Did we get the outcomes that we were looking for? And then ultimately, again, using high tech, the technology that we have, to create high touch moments. So empathy, tough love, high tech, high touch, outputs, outcomes. These are the paradoxes that we need to address now and combine as leaders to be able to be a lot more sophisticated in how we approach this. You can't just get by with, I'm the boss and you are going to do what I want to tell you to do. That time has come and gone. These generations now that are entering the workforce, already in the workforce, expect something different of us as leaders. It's our turn now to rise to the occasion and really learn how to address this and really lead our people to be their best.
Yeah, that's really useful. And I think the whole remote working piece is, and you said it at the start, is that be more intentional about things. You're not going to get those water cooler moments, as we all reference, anymore. And so you have to be intentional about that and how you go about that and be creative. I had one leader who would have a Zoom open for a period of time every day so that people just jump in.
They didn't, like didn't office hours.
They didn't have to book an appointment, almost like a knock, didn't just come in like you're going to an office. And so he created that sort of approachability and sort of an engagement and as well, accessibility as well. So I think you just got to be creative about it. And there's ways of doing that with technology now. Really appreciate your insights, Con, and look forward to the book coming out soon. And so if people do want to connect with you right now and get in touch with you, what's the best way of doing that?
Well, two avenues are probably the easiest. One, for those that engage on LinkedIn, that enjoy LinkedIn, they can find me there under Coach Con. And the second one is through, just go to my website, freshbizsolutions.com. They can find a lot of information about upcoming events, about the book, about joining our growing community of people that are interested in learning more about engagement, on finding like-minded and like-hearted people that can help them truly, truly become the leaders that they can be and create the kind of environments, the kind of culture and workplace that they want to see, where it's full of commitment and high levels of performance.
Well, once again, thank you for coming back for three times. It must be great that you come back. Who knows? There might be another time. I'm sure there'll be another time, Con. But yeah, I do thank you for coming on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, my honor, Julian, to join you. And I watch with enthusiasm and with great satisfaction how much of a difference that you've made. Your podcast has grown, the audience has grown, and the difference that you're making through your work on resilience is really making, changing workplaces one at a time.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. Much appreciated.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you like this episode, then please rate, review, and share it with your friends and colleagues. As a coaching practice, I coach high-performing leaders and teams with extreme ambitions, and it will help you go beyond what you believe is possible. If this sounds like you, then let's have a conversation. You can contact me at julianrobertsconsulting.com.